Now I get to invite Kim Robinson, who's going to preach today. So Kim has been a longtime congregant. Some of you might remember she preached on How Are the Kids last January and did a really lovely job. And I know that Kim has had a longstanding Advent practice. And so we were sitting down eating somewhere. And I said, would you want to preach for Advent? She's like, yes, I would. So I am so excited. I know Kim by trade is early childhood development researcher, is what she does by day, and has a good gifting. So welcome Kim Robinson up here to preach.
There we go. All right, can you hear me? Hi there. All right. This is for Blue Ocean for the first Sunday of Advent. Like Ashley, perhaps, I grew up in an all-white church in a nearly all-white community, one where women taught children and cared for the community, but where their words were not heard from the pulpit. My church was also very wary of any practices outside of its own. So we didn't light candles or read pre-written prayers. But when the church was open on Wednesdays and twice on Sundays, we were there. And the best part about church twice on Sundays was when you could convince your parents to let you go to your friend's house for the afternoon or to have a friend come over to your house for the afternoon. That was always the best. And it was at my friend Meg's house that I saw an Advent candle for the first time, or an Advent wreath. They had a whole setup like this in their home, and they would light Advent candles, and I had never seen that before. I thought it was something kind of strange and that they did, like how they also took a lot of vitamins. But eventually, our church would add an Advent wreath and begin lighting candles, and my parents would start taking those same vitamins and foisting them on me as well. It wasn't actually something strange or something to be afraid of. It was just something new to learn about. And although we never had an Advent tradition in my home growing up, for some reason, I personally felt drawn to it. And so when I had my first apartment as a 21-year-old graduate student, I decided to start hosting a series of what I call Advent gatherings. I did them every weekend of Advent, so 4 weekends in a row leading up to Advent. And I did that because this time of year, I don't know if it's especially as a graduate student, because it seems like it's been a long time since I've been a graduate student, still the same, just gets filled with such a frenzy. It sort of feels like a race to the finish line of the semester and getting ready for the holidays and all of the things to do at the end of the year. And I wanted to create a space that didn't have that frenzy, that people could come together and just be. And so my Advent gatherings consisted of a pot of soup and a dessert, and I just invited everyone. And sometimes it would just be me and a couple of friends. Sometimes it would be most of the people in my graduate school cohort. And we didn't light an Advent candle. I didn't share Bible stories. That felt too churchy and proselytizing for what I really wanted, was this sense of peaceful community. And I shared the tradition of Advent that I first learned at my friend Meg's house with a lesson that I first learned from her mother, Katie, that hospitality is not a spiritual gift, but something that we're all called to do. And so this practice of Advent, I have continued ever since, which I'm realizing now is more than half my life. And I've hosted Advent gatherings with soup and desserts and just said, come to everyone I know in my New York City studio apartment in my apartment in Baltimore. And when Kwame and I got married, we continued the tradition together. And I love hosting with Kwame. We've hosted Advent in Baltimore, in our home in Battle Creek, and here in Ann Arbor. And as the pandemic, you know, sort of interrupted the idea of like, come on over, have, you know, 20 people come into your apartment, we transitioned to do our Advent over Zoom. And so the first year, it was a very elaborate, you know, every day of Advent. I had different Zoom meetings. We had a lot of time in those days. But we've settled into a tradition where we're able to engage with people whether we're present with them physically or not. And it's become part of the rhythm of life. And so as we're celebrating the first Sunday of Advent, I'm so honored to be able to speak to you about how we might practice Advent as a community. So this afternoon at my house, we're going to get down the Christmas decorations, and I hope that I remembered to pack the Advent wreath in the top of the box, because that's always the thing I need first. And so that would be sort of a gift from my past self to my current self to have remembered to do that. And this evening, we will light an Advent candle as part of our home liturgy. I've gathered many different Advent readings over the years, but my most favorite one is actually one from a piece of paper. I think it actually is from the Metz family, that same family that I first experienced Advent with. And it was literally, I photocopied it over the years, this piece of paper. And it has a brief liturgy that we read back and forth together. It has a reading, a standard reading, and then it has, you can add scripture and other readings. And it opens with a prayer after we light the candles for the day that says, "O gracious light, pure brightness of the ever-living Father in heaven, O Jesus Christ, holy and blessed, now as we come to the setting of the sun and our eyes behold the vesper light, we sing your praises, O God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You are worthy at all times to be praised by happy voices, O Son of God, O Giver of life, and to be glorified through all the worlds." And then after that, we will do another reading. A few years ago, we read the book All Creation Waits, along with many of you, which had stories of an animal hibernating in this time of year. All of these readings and these daily practices build a sense that although the darkness is growing, there is a sacredness and a purpose to it. We're cozying up for the winter, much like the animals do. We're finding ways to make peace with the dark, like so many generations of people who've come before us. So I love Advent not as a time that is like a countdown to Christmas, like your little chocolate calendar might suggest, but is a season in and of itself that holds something sacred. And over the last several seasons of Advent, my appreciation and understanding of the season has been deepened by Cole Arthur Riley, the creator of Black Liturgies. Our Advent readings with our candle came from her book. I have a whole like show and tell thing up here. Her book, Black Liturgies, highly recommend, which has liturgies for different times of the year. A few years ago, in anticipation of the release of her first book, which is called This Here Flesh, she invited supporters to join her on Zoom for a series of Advent gatherings where she, joined by candlelight, invited us to do the same. And she shared readings and poetry and reflections, and it was just beautiful. And through that experience and from reading her words, my understanding of the holy dark of Advent is rooting deeper. And as roots do, they make new growth possible. In many traditions of Advent, the different weeks take on different significance. I'm most familiar with the hope, peace, joy, and love. So this week would be the hope week. Cole Arthur Riley talks about a different set of practices, the wait, the body, the silence, and the dark. One of the things I'm excited about this year at Blue Ocean is that the adults and the kids are going to study the same things for Advent, which I'm often, if I'm not up here, I'm downstairs with the kiddos. And so being able to share that same practice with our kids is really special. And so this week, our kids downstairs are talking about the body and having hope in the body. So we'll do that up here too. For some time now, I've been contemplating a particular notion that one of my most sacred spiritual practices is listening to and learning from Black women. And Advent seems like a particularly appropriate time to deepen this practice and to share it with all of you. So what I offer about bodily hope comes from what I have learned and am learning from Black women. Cole Arthur Riley describes Advent as follows. This is a long quote. Advent, in Christian traditions, is a season that coincides with the time of year when the days get shorter and the darkness of night stretches on for longer and longer. It's a time where we make space to name our deepest sadness and fears as we wait for the belonging, justice, and liberation that is coming in Christ. We practice waiting together through the uncertainty of the dark for a promise to be fulfilled, for the light of the world to be born. Yet it's also a time when we hold memory for a God who dwelled in the sacred blackness of a womb. The dark is a place of life and formation and sacred mutuality, as God depends on his creation, Mary, to keep hope in the flesh alive. It is in the holy dark of a womb that we place all our dreams, and perhaps that's why evil can so often be found in the dark. It knows and has always known that the dark is a strategic place to colonize because of its unique capacity to bear the divine. In societies like ours, where whiteness is exalted over blackness, I need not tell you the damage it does to think of darkness as innately evil and redemption as being made white as snow. What if Advent was a season of reclaiming black as sacred? A time when we acknowledge the tension and pain and uncertainty in our waiting, while also reminding that glory grows in the dark. Slowly and in faith, we believe that glory is growing with each long night that passes. We are reminded that the dark can bring many terrors, but it also marks a time of sacred rest and formation. Too often, our world, sick with toxic positivity and emotional numbness, seeks to rush from the sadness before we're ready. We are told to lament, but to do it quickly, so as not to disrupt our productivity, our utility, and our relationship to hope. But in Advent, we are granted a space to hold our deepest pain, our deepest longings for healing and belonging and justice. We are trained to wait together through the dark instead of rushing to the tyranny of artificial light. In this way, we are also formed in the holiness of the dark. Too often, we reduce symbols and language of blackness to the despairing and suffering and evil, sin, while whiteness is granted the privilege of being equated to what is good. As Martin Luther King Jr. famously said, somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionaries and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. And look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. So in Advent, we reclaim a sacred dark. We find ourselves made more true, our very vision refined in the rest and comfort that darkness can offer. How will the tenderness of the womb form us this season? If the night is longer, may it be a night of deep sleep, mysterious regeneration as we wait for a light that's real, a light that is made more beautiful by the dark. And Morgan Harper Nichols offers these words: as you lean into the light, be gentle with the word darkness. For more than it means wrong or bad, it is also the color of a full, starless night sky and actual bodies of humans who have been overlooked too many times. Many, many words have more than one meaning. And so how we experience the stories of our faith can depend a great deal on who is telling those stories and how they're told. And so I, in this context of the holy dark and of listening to Black women, one thing that I am learning is that the story is never only about the individual. It's also about the collective. So as we think about self-care, we're also thinking about collective care. As we think about our own need for rest, we think about how our community needs collective rest and what that can make possible. And so I think with that understanding, the words in John 1 take on a broader expansiveness. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. They were in the beginning with God. All things came into being through them, and without them, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in them was life, and the Word became flesh and lived among us. Both Cole Arthur Riley and Pamela Lightsey point to Toni Morrison when they talk about the world, the Word becoming flesh. They point to a scene in Beloved, where the matriarch gathers the community in a space in the woods called the clearing. And this image of going away into the woods, of having a space for community, is itself an image of the tradition of enslaved Africans to steal away from the cruelties of their lives. Freddie Williams Evans describes this as a hush harbor, where people would go and they would find ways to muffle the sound so that they could sing and dance and mourn and weep and shout for joy together in community in a way that wouldn't be seen by those who sought to oppress them. Similarly, bell hooks talks about going away to the wild places. And Bettina Love points to this idea of a hush harbor when she reflects on the way her parents raised her to love her blackness, recalling the parties that they threw in their home. And so here is how Cole Arthur Riley retells the scene from Beloved. Everyone is standing on the edges of the clearing, waiting in the trees for her to begin to preach. And she says, "Let the children come." And they all scurry to the center, and she tells them, "Let your mothers hear you laugh." And they laugh. And she calls the men to come down and says, "Let your wives and children see you dance." And they do. And finally, she calls the women to the center and says, "Cry, for the living and the dead just cry." And without covering their eyes, the women let loose. And they're all tangled up together in each other, and the men are crying, and the women are dancing, and the children are crying and laughing until eventually they all collapse into the grass together to hear Baby Suggs give a sermon where she says, "In this here place, we flesh, flesh that weeps, laughs, flesh that dances on bare feet in the grass." It starts, and Morrison writes, "She did not tell them to go and sin no more. She calls them to awaken to their stories, and she leads them in the sacred cry of the body." And that idea of not telling them go and sin no more, which is such a central story in how I receive the gospel, what does that mean in the context of a group of people who were formerly enslaved? When the sin of the community and the institution that was brought upon them is what should happen no more. Lisa Sharon Harper has written a book called The Very Good Gospel, based on that same premise, reflecting on her family's own story. Her great-grandmother was born enslaved, and she thought, what does that mean, go and sin no more? Like, a woman who didn't have the autonomy over her own body. And so she retells the story of the gospel as a story of shalom, of peace, of individual and collective and corporate peace. So in this Advent season, I encourage you to make it a season and to begin a practice that extends far beyond Advent, in which your interior life is developed and shaped by Black women. This has been a practice of mine going back decades. And it's a long-term commitment. If you yourself are not a Black woman, please know that this practice can be encouraging, but it can and should also challenge you and be uncomfortable. It can and should bring up the difficult and uncomfortable truths about how whiteness and patriarchy impact so much of the world and how we understand what is true. Consider how you need to shift your heart to be able to genuinely hear truth through the words and experiences of Black women. And please know that I'm in no way suggesting that you become someone who demands that the Black women in your life or on your social media feed educate you about things about which you could very well educate yourself. The internet is full of articles and podcasts and video clips, and there's piles and piles of books that you can listen to and learn from Black women without putting yourself in the center of that learning. Follow Black women on social media who are offering insight on the world as they experience it, and do not slide into their comments or their DMs asking for further clarification. If you have questions, sit with those questions, reflect on why you have those questions, and let that be a learning in and of itself. And as you're learning from Black women, compensate them for their efforts. Buy their books, join their Patreon, support their organizations, particularly as we go into the holiday season where we're buying things. As we journey into the holy dark, there is a sacredness in listening to and learning from Black women. As much as I find the sacred darkness of the womb to be a beautiful image, and the Advent season is one that gives particular importance to women in God's story, I also needed to hear what Tracy Ellis Ross said just a few weeks ago when she said, "As a childless woman, I want to say to the people who think that a woman's worth is measured in her baby count, I mean, shout out to all the amazing mothers. But childless women have been mothering the world and elevating the world as aunties, godmothers, teachers, mentors, sisters, and friends. The list goes on. You do not have to push out a baby to push humanity forward." I need a drink. Ooh, sit with that for a moment. May this Advent season be one in which we deconstruct the lie that there is a hierarchy of human value and experience that truth in our bodies. May we celebrate the divine feminine as it is manifested and expressed in the lives and inner worlds of Black women, past and present. Before we move into our time of meditation, I want to offer some recommendations for this sacred Advent practice of listening to and learning from Black women. So I've cited many so far in my talk. I recommend getting their books, especially Black Liturgies or This Here Flesh by Cole Arthur Riley. I also would recommend Trisha Hersey, who's written a book called Rest is Resistance, which is a whole other sermon, but I want to point to her work as a resource for practicing rest in a season that is so often filled with frenzy. In addition to a book, her first book called Rest is Resistance, she has another book that just came out called We Will Rest, and there's also this very helpful rest deck. I love a card deck. 50 Practices to Resist Grind Culture. I'll just pull one. So on the front of the card, it says, "My body is my teacher." And on the back, a rest practice. You don't need permission from anyone to rest and listen to your body. Let your body be your teacher. Your body knows the way. Your body holds messages of liberation that it can only offer to you while you are in a rested state. One of the deepest lessons as you deprogram from the false teachings of grind culture will be learning to activate your inherent power as a human being. Your brainwashing regarding rest is intimately tied to your self-worth. You deserve rest. And one more resource. If Emily's recent sermon series on reading the Bible has sparked more curiosity for you about Bible reading, I recommend the podcast Get in the Word with Truth Table, which is a 15-minute daily Bible reading by two Black women, Dr. Christina Edmondson and Akemene Uwen. I had a long period of time where I just couldn't read the Bible, and listening to Black women read the Bible and pray over it has been healing. So as we close with a time of meditation, I want to read another section of Beloved by Toni Morrison, as it is quoted by Pamela Lightsey in her book, Our Lives Matter. Go ahead and get comfortable in your seat and settle into your body. People and babies make noise, and that's a gift we celebrate too. As I read, notice where you experience these words in your body, and we'll follow them with a few moments of silence. And then after that silence, we'll close with a breath prayer, which is also by Cole Arthur Riley from Black Liturgies, where I'll say a phrase as we breathe in, and then another phrase as we breathe out. All right. Here, she said, in this here place, we flesh, flesh that weeps, laughs, flesh that dances on bare feet in grass. Love it. Love it hard. Yonder they do not love your flesh. They despise it. You've got to love it. This is flesh I'm talking about here. Flesh that needs to be loved. Feet that need to rest and to dance. Backs that need support. Shoulders that need arms. Strong arms, I'm telling you. And oh, my people, out yonder, hear me. They do not love your neck unnoosed and straight. So love your neck. Put a hand on it. Grace it. Stroke it and hold it up. And all your inside parts that they just as soon slop for hogs, you've got to love them. The dark, dark liver. Love it. Love it. And the beat and beating heart. Love that too. More than eyes or feet, more than your life-holding womb and your life-giving private parts, hear me now. Love your heart, for this is the prize. And now a breath prayer. On the inhale, the world is dim. On the exhale, but glory grows in the dark. On the inhale, I am held in sacred darkness. On the exhale, I choose rest in the unknown. in closing. Glory to the one who comes in flesh for all flesh. Amen.